Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Daily Observations podcast from the Mac Observer. It is Wednesday, June 12th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamott. I'm back. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Glad you're with me today. Also with me today, because there's no way that whatever it is I have can transmit across an ocean or across a podcast, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello. Glad you're feeling a bit better.
Me too.
I'm listening to the pair of you with your sore throat. It's like listening to like a smooth jazz, like some kind of sexy smooth jazz radio station.
Yeah, I do have to apologize for my voice today. I'm suffering pollen allergies.
Easy listening with John and Kelly.
That's good. I've made it up to easy listening radio. Normally, I just go from my normalized straight to B. Arthur. So I just go around, shake my fist and go, Shady Pines, ma. Anyway, and that reference doesn't date me even a little bit. Charlotte, I actually wanted to start with you. Yes. You got a very interesting notice yesterday.
Yeah, it was today, actually. I hadn't logged into my Dropbox account for a few days. Like, I always have it kind of sinking in the background. Mm-hmm. And then today I logged in on a computer when I was out and about doing some work, and I got a notification that said, you've got 2 terabytes of storage. I was like, yay. And then they were like, you need to pay £16 more a year. And I was like, oh. Which, to put it in context, so I used to pay for the terabyte plan. Mm-hmm. In the UK, that was kind of, I think, £79.80. And now it's going to be £95.88, I believe, which is not an inconsiderable jump. But it just struck me as interesting. So basically, having a look at it, it appears that Dropbox have basically got rid of its terabyte plan.
Yes.
Which I don't really get, because that seems to me the most enticing plan for most people. Most people using Dropbox don't need more than a terabyte, right?
I wouldn't think so.
So that seems like a pretty... That's a lot of data space that a lot of people are not going to fill. But we can come to that.
Right.
The other thing is that they seem to put a whole bunch of extras, and they've basically given Dropbox a bit of an upgrade. They say you can bring content together and edit it kind of through Dropbox. So they've got an example of editing, making a Google Doc in Dropbox and editing it within Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that. I guess that means you don't have to log into your Google account, but given that Google Docs is a cloud service anyway, you can links up with Trello, there's links up with Slack. They're obviously trying to make it a productivity hub, aren't they?
Right.
Which I get. Look, I use Dropbox the whole time. I have pictures from my phone automatically syncing to it. I put recordings I do of interviews there. I do all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems to be quite a lot of money.
Yes.
And it seems to be quite a big shift in what Dropbox is. And I think they're asking a lot of money for stuff that a lot of customers won't find that useful.
Now, to put that in US dollars,
they have
two plans right now for individuals. There's a 2 terabyte plan and a 3 terabyte plan. And with the 2 terabyte plan is either $12 a month.
$144 a year.
Yeah, it's $11.99 a month, so it comes out to like $143, you know, whatever, $85 or something per month. And then if you bill yearly, it's $10 a month, so it's $120 instead of $144 if you do the 2 terabyte plan. And the 3 terabyte plan is $16.58 a month, or $198.96. And it's $20 a month to do it monthly. So if you know you're going to need it for a year, sign up for a year. Obviously, it's going to be a lot more economical that way. But that's what's happening on in some of the changes that Dropbox has made was, first of all, the free plan is super duper limited for people who don't know. They've now ratcheted that down to 3 devices that you can get. And I think it's a gigabyte or 2 for free.
I thought it was only 2.
Yeah, like a 2 gigabyte. And then you can get additional space with referrals, although that's a lot harder to come by now because a lot of people already have Dropbox. But when a lot of people didn't, you could get a lot of referrals and sign other people up, and then everybody got a lot of free space. So I have a certain amount of space for that reason because I knew a lot of people who didn't have it who should be using it for whatever reason and got them set up. So as of yet, I am not up against a storage limit for Dropbox. So I'm not paying for it at this point because I have other ways that I handle all of that. But they've made some changes. And if you haven't logged into Dropbox itself, if you're just using things that rely on it, you may want to log in and take a look around because there may be some surprise adjustments on your account as well. Like Charlotte's went up, and I assume other people's are going to go up as well. Or things could be taken away. Like maybe you could be surprised with a bill, but also you could be surprised with, I can't sync this device anymore. Or I have files I can't get to now for whatever reason. So you may want to just go to Dropbox.com and sign in and make sure everything looks like it should.
So the thing that strikes me, first of all, is, like I said, I just cannot see how many people will require this. I suspect I'm a relatively heavy user of Dropbox. Mm-hmm. As I say, I store a lot of photos in there. That's the main thing I use it for, and there's some other products as well. But I'm now using 1.4% of what I have available.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm the type of person who's not going to be using much of it, but I'm kind of have a choice of, it's a kind of all or nothing choice, isn't it?
Right.
It's either 2 gigabytes or 2 terabytes.
Mm-hmm.
I can't quite get my head around why there's not giving a more a middle option, a 500 meg, a ter, you know, whatever, 500 right. gig, whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? I don't quite understand why they haven't got a couple of middle options, a terabyte.
Well,
that seems bizarre to me. If you want a pro plan that has all this syncing with Atlassian, with Slack, with Zoom video conferencing, which is what they're offering now,
mm-hmm.
and you want to charge more for it, mm-hmm. great. Go ahead. I suspect there's lots of businesses that will want to get their people into that.
Yes.
But...
And if you do, there's a different pricing plan. Those are Dropbox for Teams.
Right.
They will integrate with single sign-on. There's other stuff that they list on the plans page for the kind of stuff that you can do with those.
Yeah, right.
But it's only available in the Teams plans. And the team plan starts at 3 terabytes, and there's 2 flavors. 3 terabytes and as much space as needed.
Whoa. So,
yeah.
But my point is, I need Dropbox. I don't need 2 terabytes.
Right.
I mean, it's quite nice that it's effectively turned my Mac Mini into over 2 terabyte machine now. That's mm-hmm. kind of nice. But
yep.
it just seems crazy to me that for a user like me, there is, and I suspect I'm not a odd case of Dropbox users.
Right.
I was taken aback that they've made it this way. It's suddenly, you know, it just suddenly appeared. I think we'd kind of heard hints that Dropbox was changing, and that's fine. But it just seems to me they haven't understood the kind of personal use users that and consumers that want it. It's either professional setting or the kind of tiny, almost no use, it's so small setting.
Well, John, what do you think on this?
Well, I'm not a heavy user of Dropbox. I'm still on the free plan.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Charlotte, I don't make use of internet or cloud in a heavy kind of way. I tend to keep my stuff locally and backed up locally.
Yeah.
And that helps avoid accumulating too many subscriptions. And I've got plenty of storage. So I suppose if you've got a use case where you need to have stuff backed up and available everywhere, that's a great use for Dropbox. But I just kind of got stuck on the free plan, and I'm just kind of keeping it there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I work.
That makes sense. Now, I know a lot of other people who run podcasts, and I think podcasters are probably good with the 2 terabyte plan. You can store a lot of archives and things there, and Selective Sync makes that pretty easy. But even like when I think about how much space 2 terabytes is, and I think, oh, well, like, of course, individual users want to get in on that, right? Because I can back up my iPhone camera roll to Dropbox and it'll just live there and it'll be great. But A, I have another option to do that with iCloud Photo Stream. And B, 2 terabytes is so many pictures. Like, I take a lot of pictures, and I don't know if I've come near 2 terabytes in my entire photo library.
It's a huge amount of space. Mm-hmm. I mean, fantastic. You know, that's great. I'm excited to try and fill it up, but I'm going to get nowhere near. And I suspect I'm, like I said, I suspect I'm a far heavier user of Dropbox than quite a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really like the pro plan. I like how it gives me access across multiple devices. I like how it's, you know, basically expanded my computer hugely. Between that and a terabyte hard drive, I've got, you know, more memory than I could ever fill.
Yeah.
And that's great. But a near 20% price increase does make you step back a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing about subscription plans, is that whether it's a cable TV subscription or a Dropbox subscription, one of the things they do is get you hooked, get you dependent, offer all sorts of cool features, and then start raising the price slowly.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. And there's, I'm going to be writing a bit more on subscription, particularly in the app space later on. And I think you've hit the nail on the head, John, that actually we become more, we think, oh, it's only $10 a month. We've talked about this a lot, haven't we, Kelly, in the media?
Subscription fatigue. Yeah.
Right, exactly. We've discussed this a lot, and you know, this is not $10. This is whatever it is, $140, £95. It's the type of money where it makes you think, do I want this automatically coming out of my bank account? Now, as it happens, I don't have to pay that subscription rate till March next year, so I've got kind of over 6 months to no 9 months really to think about that, but. That's, you know, that kind of price increase will make you consider that as an option, won't it?
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot more to subscription fatigue in a lot of ways. But one of the things that I wonder about is, I mean, like, Dropbox did add a bunch of extra stuff to Dropbox. A lot of features, and they're very cool if you're the person for them. And maybe you're not.
Yeah. I think you've hit, that's exactly, I would have liked to have had the option, do you want to go to this plan or do you want to stay with the plan you've got?
Yeah.
And I would have chosen to save the £16 and stayed with the plan I've got.
Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, there's all the other stuff that goes into that. But that's one of the things that I think is interesting about some of this is, like, you know, people are like, oh, Dropbox raised their prices for no reason. Like, people are going to be mad about it. But some people really want some of those integrated services, want to be able to take advantage of, you know, Trello hookup or Slack hookup or whatever, and have those integrations available. And that's fantastic, you know, if you use Trello, if you use Slack. But not everyone does. So, you know, in some cases, it's not going to make sense for people to continue. So, Charlotte, I look forward to your article on Dropbox alternatives.
Yeah. And I'll also be fascinated to see some user numbers and subscriber numbers in the weeks and particularly months ahead. You know, when those bills for people, those increased bills and changed plans start coming through to people, I'll be very interested to see how many people go to those alternatives and say, do you know what? This is too expensive for me now.
Yeah.
I'm not getting, so it's not even that it's so crazy expensive, you know, less than £100 for over 2 terabytes of storage.
Mm-hmm.
It's not inordinate. It's not an inordinate amount of money, is it? But no. It's enough to make people think. And I, like I say, I'll be very interested to watch those subscriber numbers in the coming months.
Absolutely. And it will also be interesting to see how this stacks up to changes that Apple makes in iCloud. And sure. allowing for simpler file storage along iCloud Drive as well. Particularly now that their pricing has gotten a little bit more competitive. So we'll have to see how that works. And as we do, you know you'll hear about it here. And if Charlotte decides she needs to scoop everything out of Dropbox and move, I will have her on to talk about it. I don't know if it's going to come to that. But if it does...
There will be angry tweets and articles. Don't worry.
Oh, yes. Yes. It will not be a silent transition. I guarantee it.
Oh, no.
Now, speaking of the non-silent transition, I would like to talk about the new era of the MacBook Pro.
Mac Pro.
Or Mac Pro. Yeah. Someday we'll talk about the new era of the MacBook Pro. That's another show. John, you wrote an article yesterday.
John, it's been nice knowing you.
I've been very enthusiastic about the new Mac Pro. I've written about it in favorable ways and described who might use it. Mm-hmm. And I was pleased to see Apple finally come out with it and announce it at WWDC, which I hoped that they would do, and my hopes were fulfilled. Mm-hmm. So I've been very pleased with it. But then after it was announced, there was some whining about how much it cost. And I did not have a good reaction to that.
Wait a minute. People, are you saying Apple released something that was expensive and people are complaining about the price?
Well, no, they're more specifically, Mac enthusiasts are complaining about how they cannot afford the top of the line Mac in the way they always have been, so that they could be the kid on the block with the latest and coolest.
Right. Because Apple hardware is Pokemon and you have to have all of them.
It's the first time, I think, that a reasonably astute, technical, reasonably affluent Apple customer could not dream of affording the top-of-the-line Mac like we could in the past. I mean, mm-hmm. the Mac Pro has been in the $2,000 to $3,000, and in 2013, the price crept up. But I bought a bottom-of-the-line Mac Pro in 2014. Mm-hmm. With a slight discount for under $3,000. But $6,000 for starters and then mild expansion, you don't have to buy the display unless you need a reference display, but you're still looking at, even with a modest display and a modest storage upgrade, you're looking at $7,000. Mm-hmm. So that's out of the price range of all but technical professionals, corporations, the government. And this has annoyed users greatly, and without naming names, there are people who think that Apple should have come out with a more affordable version just to please the enthusiasts. Well, Apple's under no obligation to
I'll name names.
Its
it's everybody.
Computers.
The same people who complained every dub-dub right. that
Apple's
there wasn't a new machine.
No obligation to design its equipment to meet the needs of people who are self-entitled.
And also, we all watched that keynote together. Mm-hmm. And Apple didn't at any point pretend that that device is not for me, right?
Right.
It's probably not for Kelly. It's probably not even for John. Nope. It is not for us. It is for someone running a recording studio. Mm-hmm. It is someone running a film or animation studio.
Right.
It's not really for us, is it, John?
Computational scientists doing large simulations and models, complex encryption and signal analysis.
Look, here's the bottom line on it. If you're paying for a computer for yourself, that machine is not for you.
Exactly.
That's right.
Buying your own computer, it is not for you.
But it's so cool, and it's so lovely.
Oh, it's
and
so
it's
nice.
It's so beautiful, and it's so fast, and
I mean,
it's so
it looks like a freaking cheese grater, but yeah, it is cool.
You want it because it's so cool. The same way you want a McLaren 720S.
Oh, yeah.
I saw one parked in the parking lot at the local mall in valet parking. The driver had locked it up and left, and we were all gathered around it, taking photos and touching
it's
it.
It's so pretty.
And we were going, 720S, that's the car I want.
Yeah.
But it's like $300,000.
Right. So, and like, my driving needs are nowhere near McLaren-level driving needs. They're barely Civic-level driving needs.
It's
not for me.
We've learned that these kinds of supercars are very expensive when it comes to insurance and maintenance, and we can't afford them, and we live with that. And we go out and we buy our Honda Civics. Mm-hmm. But in the case of the Macintosh literati and experienced.
I just saw a picture of a McLaren 720S and now I really want one.
Yeah. So I think there's some psychology involved here where it was always cool to have the latest and greatest Mac. And you could afford it even if it heated up your credit card a little bit, you know, those $3,000. But the psychology that Apple should have created a model that you could afford just doesn't sync with me. And I don't think Apple was under any pretensions or thoughts that they should do that. Because for most of us who are doing normal everyday work, like us writers and small scale work at home, podcasting and creation and web development, an iMac like Charlotte, an iMac, I'm sorry, iMac mini like Charlotte, I can't speak today. A Mac mini like Charlotte just bought.
We call it shiny pretty, John.
It's all you need. It's got plenty of expansion. You can get an i7. You can pack it with memory. It's got a great deep bench score. That's faster than my 2013 Mac Pro if you buy the i7 model. I don't think you did, Charlotte, but it's got plenty of power.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I bought an i5 version or whatever it is. And
that's still no slouch. It's 2018.
I mean, no, I edit video on here. I edit audio on here. I'm writing. I'm editing photos. This thing is...
Sure, that's all we need.
It does more than what I need. And I bought a...
And you paid, what, £1,000?
About that, yeah. And a nice monitor for a couple of hundred, that kind of price range it was in the end. And, that was the right... My point is that is the right model for me. For some people, a MacBook Pro, because they need to be out and about more. They don't need the big screen. That's the right model for them.
You know how we say we only use 10% of our brain?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we would only use 10% of a Mac Pro's capabilities. Because with OpenCL...
Double digits is an awful high estimation of that number, John.
With
OpenCL, you can probably hit 60 teraflops.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody except technical professionals at national laboratories and government can write OpenCL code that can exercise 28 cores and the graphics unit with thousands of cores and extract that kind of performance.
Yeah.
The
you know who's going to use this is...
warms your office.
John, you will know the name of the woman. Her name escapes me at the moment. Who created the image of the black hole.
Oh, it's she me too.
She's doing that. She's using one of these machines
the scientist that I redlining about, it.
Yeah,
who helped write the algorithm that saw the black hole?
Yeah,
she was using a MacBook Pro actually.
Yes,
if you look at all the photos, she has a MacBook Pro in there.
Mm-hmm. But I know that, like, when they talked about the hardware behind it, it was this small army of machines. And the thing that I think some of those people, John, aren't considering is that there are people whose jobs, all the people that you talked about, who are actually excited and in the market for a machine like this, who literally outgrew the hardware that they had, that Apple had available. There's no amount of money that those people could pay, regardless of Apple's prices for RAM or processor upgrades or storage or anything else. Even being willing to pay that, the hardware profile simply did not meet their needs. And Apple wanted those people back. So when people talk about pro users, these are the people they're talking about. My friend who works at ILM, right? My friend who does work for like the NASA JPL. Like, those are the people that we're talking about. And those folks outgrew it and they were sad to leave it, but didn't have an option because they couldn't get their hands on enough computer from Apple. And so, you know, all the people complained for ages about how Apple was neglecting their pro customers. Apple finally figured it out and did something for their pro customers. And I think it's the definition of pro customer that's tripping people up. Because, like, my hot take in the keynote, as soon as I saw what they were doing with that machine and how many times they could have just dropped the mic, right? Here's this unbelievable monster graphics card. Here's what it does. You measure its horsepower in petaflops or some ridiculous measure. And by the
teraflops.
And by the way, you can have two. boom. Like, they just kept doing that, right? Like, here's this unbelievable thing. You can have two of them. Here's this unbelievable thing it does. You know, in real life, people need, you know, this, and we've gone two orders of magnitude past that, or whatever. And they kept doing it, and they kept doing it. And we got near the end, even before the price.
They had three orchestras recording on it at one point.
Mm-hmm. And we got near the end of it, and I went, this machine is not for people. This machine is for Pixar. Like, if you are financing your own computer, it's not this computer.
But think how that goes against the culture. You know, you always got to have the latest and greatest. I see ads on TV, you know, the new version of Captain of Marvel is coming out on DVD, on Blu-ray soon. Be the first to have it. It's available Friday. Go get it. You want this?
Yes, I do. You know, very much.
We have constant pressure in our society to throw away the old and upgrade to the new. And buy new cars and buy new equipment and buy new computers. There's this constant pressure on us to have the latest. We buy new iPhones every year. Of course, we have to at TMO to be up to date. But a lot of other people feel like they have to have a new iPhone every year to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think about how that pressure accumulates in society and then bleeds over into the psychology of the Mac Pro. So if I have to have a new iPhone every year, then I can afford it barely, then I should be able to afford a Mac Pro. And getting away from that psychology and maturing in your approach to computing, it's hard to do.
Well, and part of that is because it used to be that way. Like, we got new computers every year because they were so much faster because the technology behind them was evolving at such a rate.
Yeah, but the Mac Pros in the past were not really pro equipment. They were called pros because they were expensive. But when you think about it, they weren't really pro-level computers. I mean,
well, Apple, they were upgradable. And so you could... You know, in 6 months, you can drop in that new graphics card. In 12 months, you can drop in a new hard drive.
Think about the 2013 Mac Pro and compare that to a Hewlett Packard Z workstation where you can put a terabyte in or more RAM in it. And you can have 50 teraflops of storage and you can have all these graphics cards. And these HP Z8 workstations were selling for $30,000 to $50,000. And the technical professionals knew that.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't on the radar of the normal Apple customer.
Right.
And so when Apple comes out with a machine that can compete against these HPs, everybody goes, oh, my God, oh, my God, why are they doing that? I'm a normal customer. I should be able to afford it.
Right.
So
guess what? Not anymore.
So I want to throw something else in there.
Yes.
Because when Apple released the new iMac back in March, I wrote, Apple has decided that all iMacs are pro devices. And I've been listening to this conversation trying to decide if I was completely wrong or completely right. And I think I think I might have been right.
I think you're right.
I think I might not be as wrong as had a moment during this conversation that I worried I was.
You.
As going to be. Because let's look. There's, for $1,300, that's the kind of bottom of the end Mac Mini. iMac. Let's do the $1,500 one.
Mm-hmm.
That has 8th generation i5 chip, a 21.5-inch monitor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot for most professionals.
Yeah.
You want a bigger hard drive? That it's got a terabyte hard drive, although it's a Fusion one. For people who want a powerful computer, a top-end computer... You have the iMac that has serious power, serious capabilities. Obviously, I'm not quite sure it's expandable. Look, you're not getting 28 cores in an iMac, obviously.
Right.
But you can get a seriously powerful machine for fractions of the cost of a Mac Pro and still...
Well,
and you're probably still only using a fraction of what...
There's a caveat to that, Charlotte.
Go on.
To take one of those 21-inch iMacs with a Coffee Lake processor and try to do real-time rendering of 8K video.
No, you can't, and that's my point, that's not what that machine is for, but that is what the Mac Pro is for. That's exactly right. I completely agree with you, John. Like, if you want a powerful computer, but you're not running Pixar...
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of options in the iMac that are going to do you just fine.
Right. Well, I think it depends on your value of pro user.
You have to figure out what your class of user is. Are you surfing? and shopping? Are you doing web development? Are you doing videos, rendering? Are you doing scientific computation? You have to figure out where you are in that spectrum.
It depends on the value of pro user. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
Because there are people who think they are, and there are people who are. So that gap is pretty great.
It's like buying a McLaren 720S and then cruising along in a school zone. You know, it's a lot of wasted power because you take your kids to school every day and you're going 35 miles an hour. But you have a McLaren.
Can I just say, no one that has a McLaren 720S has children.
But that doesn't mean you're not stuck in a school zone.
I'm not just clear about that.
Yes, to be fair. So we will pick up the rest of this conversation. I think there's a lot more to say on this, and we will do so in the future. John, thanks so much for coming by today.
My pleasure. I'm sorry about my voice.
Oh, don't worry about it. You sound great. We'll just call this one the full After Dark episode because you and I both sound like late night DJs. Charlotte, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much, and rest in peace. Your social media mentions, John. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, enjoy that. It's been fun. And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.